Welcome back to the Roundtable. 14 minutes after 9 o'clock on a Thursday, a rainy and raw Thursday. Ray Graff temporarily in for Joe Donahue. It's a very kind of an odd beginning to the morning. The regular panel, if you will, is two-thirds short. Alan and Ira are still taping the show, but Rosemary's here.
I'm here.
That's at least 75% of the positive vibe.
It happens about once every hockey season when they just suit up the clubhouse guy to be the backup goalie.
Exactly.
And they keep their fingers crossed that he's never going to get into the game, but never say never. And he maybe gets 1 minute of ice time in an NHL game, and that's the situation right now.
So I'm the okay. That's
Ian has.
I think
a
that was a shot
metaphor for every
I really do.
Occasion.
And if
I'm
you haven't
sure
noticed, Ian Pickus is also here temporarily while we wait for Joe Donahue.
It's like the Oscars, but except we're actually on the air while the seat warmers are on.
Right, exactly. And Joe is in traffic, but he should be here momentarily, as will Ira and Alan.
Meanwhile, a bad day to be starting late. There is so much news. Oh, my gosh.
Indeed. And we aired the New York gubernatorial debate last night. Four candidates went at it. There was some acrimony last night, Ian.
Yeah, it was the one chance, really, for Republican Rob Astorino, the Westchester County executive, to get his barbs in on the same stage as Governor Cuomo, because this is the only debate that's been agreed to. There was supposed to be a second one down at our colleagues at WNYC, a radio debate, but Astorino said, you know, this should really be televised and it should be a one-on-one debate. Instead, we settled for the one debate with the four candidates last night in Buffalo. And I think you heard some defensive work by Governor Andrew Cuomo in the debate. You know, he's running on, as he said, throughout this campaign. His 4 years so far is his campaign resume. Rob Astorino came out swinging. They were given really one-minute chunks throughout the debate. And when you start to do the math, four candidates, one-minute answer each, you don't get a ton of chances. So I looked up and it was almost the end of the debate, the closing statements before we even got used to it.
The other candidates were they were so out of it. It was just crazy. And in fact, they complained about it and said we didn't even begin to talk about the issues. So, I mean, it raises the old issue of do you be inclusive? Are you inclusive in a debate and you get everybody, give everyone a fair chance? Or do you get down to the two major parties?
Well, this is a great point, and our political observer, Alan Chartok, will be in a bit, and he'll want to weigh in on this. But this is an excellent point. On one hand, you could say the smaller party candidates, they don't have a real shot at this.
The media has to take them seriously.
But on the other side, you say, well, if the voters are going to have a true option here, they need to know information. So it's a fine line to draw. Certainly adding the extra two candidates was a plus for Governor Cuomo.
Especially because the Libertarian, Mr. McDermott, seemed to side with Governor Cuomo in many of his answers, which took me a bit by surprise. Usually you're expecting the third party candidates to have very clear distinctions. Otherwise, why are they in the race?
Right.
Meanwhile, Howie Hawkins, the Green Party candidate, said, look, I'm polling at 9%, and I should be taken seriously here.
Ian, we'll have much more on this in Midday Magazine.
That's right. Karen DeWitt was out in Buffalo as one of the moderators, and we will have her story at the top of the show on Midday at noon.
I am told, Ian, that Ira and Alan are in the building. We'll take a break here, Rob, and we'll be back, and then we'll have the full panel. Ian, thanks for being here.
Hey, my pleasure.
Support comes from Union College Concert Series, presenting Polish pianist Rafał Blechacz performing works of Bach, Beethoven, and Chopin, Sunday at 3 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org. The Carey Institute for Global Good, Rensselaerville, announcing inaugural chamber music concert with Yehuda Hanani and Jeffrey Swan, Friday, December 12th at 7 p.m., 518-797-5100 for tickets. And Croissant Bakery, 197 Lark Street, Albany, New York, crafting desserts and cakes on the premises using all natural ingredients, featuring custom sculpted cakes, sugar art, and dessert catering for weddings, corporate events, and holidays. CroissantBakery.com.
By the way, I forgot to mention the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. We love your comments. It's always fun to hear from you, well, most of the time. It's 19 minutes after 9 o'clock, Thursday morning, a lovely day to be stuck in traffic. Joe Donahue doing just that, and he will be here. We've all had some car and traffic-related issues today. So if
I didn't. I started out so early in the morning that I couldn't have possibly been here late.
You could have
I always tell my students, I always say the same thing. Don't you, Rosemary? don't you say the same thing? Don't give me this business about the throughway was crowded. Start out another half an hour.
Okay, so you started at 2:30. Yeah. You could have taken a pony here and been on time. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. Alan Chartok is now in the building. Ira Fussfeld is here. And, of course, Rosemary Armeo. And before you guys were in here, while you were recording Media Project, we had started by talking with Ian a little about the debate last night. And there were, well, there was some, as I put it, acrimony between the Republican challenger Rob Astorino and the incumbent Democrat, our friend Andrew Cuomo.
What do you say, our friend?
He's a friend to all New Yorkers.
Oh, I see. Okay, so here's what I'm thinking. There was some news coming out of this debate. One thing is that Astorino throws what he his best Hail Mary pass. I don't think it helped him.
On Moreland?
On Moreland, and said that he thought that Cuomo might be indicted presumptively by Preet Bharara. Well, there's been no hint of that that anybody else has heard, and it really was a little bit over the top. We know that Bharara has put a grand jury together to discuss the ending of the Moreland Ag Commission. And as for Cuomo, he did an interesting thing. He announced that to the fracking community, he announced that the fracking report would be out right after the election, basically. If that is the case, that's what a lot of the anti-frackers have been worried about, that he was waiting until afterwards. But he said something about Astorino. He said Astorino was all about drill, baby, drill. That might have been an indication of where he's going on this, which is a moratorium. On the other hand, one can only guess, because it may also have meant Astorino's over the top. I'll be much more moderate in my recommendations.
I thought that the debate, first of all, it gave me chills because I remember now when I started watching that debate why I hated doing those debates in my editorial boards. They're just the whole concept of those guys sitting there and talking to and past each other. At the risk of alienating many of the listeners, I suspect, and the demographic on this program, I think that the debate is hurt from the start because of the inclusion of the two minor party
candidates.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
So you're on – okay, we brought this topic up, and we wanted to bring this up with you and Alan. Is it important for democracy to have the two minor party candidates who don't really have much of a prayer of winning to have them in there, or is it more important to have both sides, the two major party candidates, have all the time?
Look, the Green Party, we hear from third-party partisans all the time here on WAMC, on Vox Pop and other things, and they say, how can anybody get outside of these two Republican Party if nobody ever gives them any publicity? So if you include them now, in the case of Howie Hawkins, who is the Green Party guy here in New York, he's running at 9%, which is huge in the polls. So by including him, you get a chance to see what Howie Hawkins has to say, although he didn't say enough, in my opinion.
But Ira, you think this is trouble. This is tough from a moderator standpoint.
I think it's well, forget about the moderator's standpoint. The idea of these things supposedly is to educate the public so that it can make a good choice in the ballot box. And there are times when we in the media have to say to ourselves, yes, we know Howie Hawkins is doing pretty well at 9%, but nonetheless, Howie Hawkins has zero chance of being the next governor of this state. The McDermott, the libertarian candidate, has even less chance. And so it's either going to be Cuomo or it's going to be Astorino. And in this particular format they use, you only had an hour. It's only one televised debate. It was like watching a speed round in Jeopardy, how fast the comments moved on and on and on. There was not a lot of depth. There were a lot of ad hominem attacks. I would much rather have had the two people who took half the time away taken away and had the full hour with the two major candidates so we could really get a chance to hear what they had to say.
Well, look, Ira, this has to do with Mario Cuomo setting the stage for his son.
Right.
Mario Cuomo always insisted when he was ahead that nobody, that all the third and fourth and fifth party candidates had to be there. We know why that was. That was to diffuse the situation. And in fact, I was the moderator of the one debate that he did, and there's a big cartoon up on my wall showing Cuomo throwing people against the so-called dwarf tossing, it's a terrible word, against the wall in order to do that. Now, that doesn't mean, however, that people aren't right. You know, I take a look at people like Norman Thomas. When I was at Hunter College, Norman Thomas was regarded as one step next to Stalin by many of the people. Yet, half the schools in New York, it seems, are now named after Norman Thomas. Everything he espoused is being done. So sometime you have to say that a third party deserves that kind of recognition. That's all.
There should be other ways to recognize the party. I agree. I thought that there were no surprises. I learned nothing new. The hard points that Astorino made, he's made before, and Cuomo answered it in the exact same way. A debate should be between two people.
Well, it's even greater than that because if you didn't know anything about the candidates and you were looking to the debate to clarify, you had the Astorino position vis-a-vis Cuomo and vice versa, the attacks that they had on each other. They screamed out for the moderators, the panelists, to probe both of them, to get some answers to these things, because otherwise we know from watching that debate is one of those two guys is lying about the other.
But look, this is the situation here is that most New Yorkers know nothing about state politics. This is their one chance to get to know something about state politics. You and Rosemary argue incorrectly, by the way, that it should be. Who says? Who made you the maven that says it should be only two people? I think Howie Hawkins has proven himself, and I think he's going to do better than 9% as a result of what happened in that.
So what? He isn't going to be. Okay. He isn't going to be the governor.
So if he can't win, his ideas don't deserve exploration.
His ideas do explore exploration, not in the context of a gubernatorial debate.
Well,
there's only one, and there's only an hour.
You mentioned okay.
And
you
there's
mentioned
only one for a good reason. That's
no,
what Andrew
that's
Cuomo
a whole other
one.
Issue.
Yes, you
and
mentioned Maven, Alan. You mentioned a maven. If there was a maven, would there not be a rule that says 2, 3, 4 debates are mandatory?
Correct.
In other words, you have one debate with four candidates. If there were four debates with four candidates, lots of room. And only an hour, by the way.
If an eagle just flew through this room, an eagle would have flown through this room. But an eagle is not in this room. And Andrew Cuomo called the...
I'm losing this.
An eagle?
Yeah, don't worry about it. Well, Rich Guthrie's on it too for Vox Pop. We'll talk about birds later.
But Ray, your point is well taken, at least
by
me.
Ray, what point?
Well, his point is there weren't enough debates, and Alan's point is there were the politicians, or Cuomo in particular, set the ground rules, and I'm saying that they do not do service to the voters, and it's another reason why people in this state and in elsewhere where these similar things happen have such disdain for the process.
For debates, yeah. If you're relying, as you say, on the debate for your sole source of information, don't bother voting. You know nothing.
What are your sole source? There you go
because
again.
There is print.
There you go
There's
again.
Magazines. There's all kinds of commercials. There's lots of ways to find out about
people. So Cuomo has $45 million to spend on this.
This is not about Cuomo. Cuomo is by far not the only politician who has used the rules of a debate for his own advantage. You would be knocking him if he set up something that would make him lose.
This is so exasperating.
I can tell you're exasperated.
Oh,
I have to say it's kind of exciting.
If I have to stop this show, you kids,
exasperating. This is New York. People on Long Island, New York, they don't even understand that Albany is up here. And that this stuff is going
and
on.
And the debate is going to change them. Here's Albany. Here's the map.
Rosemary, it's one. No, you can't get away with it. It's one part. It's one part of the picture. Cuomo gets to spend $45 million just saying, Andrew's great. On the other hand, here's a debate where at least, even if he's a schnook, he gets to say, something about Cuomo maybe indicted or he's corrupt or he's this or that. This is very important to have it. Now, he had to take the best deal he could take, although Astorino made a big mistake because WNYC was supposed to have the second debate. That's the public radio station in New York City.
Right.
And Astorino turned it down because it wasn't on television. Well, that was dumb.
I think you made perhaps a leap of faith in saying earlier that New York State has a chance now to find out about these people. How many people in New York State watched?
I don't know.
Not many.
Not many.
Because the debate was not a debate. It was just a standoff.
Well, would they watch anyway?
They also had the World Series, and you had any number of other things
going
on.
That little thing.
That's even more boring.
Well, I happen to agree with you, but I just think that it's a disservice to the voters of the state when these things happen. They've all done it. It's not just Cuomo. By the way, I think Astorino purported himself very well going against him. Whether or not you agree with him, he was not cowed by Cuomo.
He's a former radio guy.
He is. You didn't
impressed
by him?
No, I wanted to like him more. I thought his points he did not make well.
There were no Rick Perry moments.
No. But well, that's true, right, but that's kind of a low standard.
I mean, the other two guys were much less speakable.
Ray's got his hand up in the air.
This means either you're all nuts or we got to wrap it up. All right, listen, the email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan and Rosemary will have a huggable moment during the break, and then we'll be back. We may be back.
My pony just arrived. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. I'm Jodanyu along with Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Ira Fussfeld. My thanks to Ray Graff and Ian Pickus for filling in while we all were a little late for the broadcast this morning, and I thank you very much for that. We have been talking a lot about, in the first half hour, talking a lot about the debate that took place last night between the gubernatorial candidates in New York State, and not surprisingly, given the tenor of the conversation, which was very nice and civilized as I was listening in the in the car coming in, we have a lot of letters and a lot of response, so let's start there, and then we'll go to Ottawa, and then we'll go to Ferguson, and then we'll probably
lightning round
go to a break.
Okay. Stephen says, the government of my country snubs honest simplicity and fondles creative villainy. Mark Twain. Take it for what it's worth, folks. Okay. So says Jeremy. Michael McDermott and Howie Hawkins both spoke eloquently, had the air of honesty and true interest of the people of the state of New York in mind. The Republican-Democratic candidate sounded wholly untrustworthy, disrespectful, angry, and full of the same false rhetoric and cliché talking point stereotypical of career politicians. Please stop focusing on the red and the blue. Spread the word about Howie Hawkins and Michael McDermott. Okay. And then from North Canaan comes Olake. Debates are essential to show off all the candidates against each other and, more importantly, to show alternatives. This time, Hawkins outshone everyone. Debate is a plain
Republican debate.
It's REPDEM. All right, sorry, I got enough trouble as it is. a Rep Dem debate is a plain waste of time since both sides are stuffed with sound bits and rhetoric galore. Okay, that's from Fishkill. And Swirsky writes, I didn't watch last night's gubernatorial debate after years of watching all levels of debates. I find the only qualities of political debates might reveal are a candidate's self-control and ability to think on one's feet in a somewhat challenging environment. Otherwise, who knows on the spot which supporting facts are accurate, supportings in quotes? Who wants to hear mudslinging? How often do these forums produce a really creative, feasible strategy for the problems that face constituents? This might be one reason, however, to include minor candidates. They have nothing to lose by brainstorming aloud. It's a little like a beauty contest. Okay, so that's that. And then we heard from Stephen, who said...
I'd like to see them in Speedos. That'd be good.
Speedos, yeah. And then and Frank says... I think the inclusion of third-party candidates is essential. However, the way the debate was set up did not allow a full discussion of the issues. There should be four debates with full discussion of the issues. And that's from Dr. Romo.
We could back that.
Well, yeah, but except I keep telling you about real politics versus the way it is.
Do you watch the newsroom? I know Joe watches the newsroom.
It's an
HBO problem. It's on various times of the day. Yeah. At any rate, they're rerunning
whatever you want.
I don't have time, Ira, to watch television.
I see. Well, I have a little bit more time, and I also have a DVR. But they're rerunning some of the older episodes. And in one of the episodes, and it's right on point here, the Will McAvoy character, the lead anchor.
Played by Jeff Daniels.
Played by Jeff Daniels. They bring in a couple of Republican consultants who are planning a Republican debate for president, and the McAvoy Network wants to get the debate on its network, but they want to do it differently. So they have eight of their staffers dressed up as the eight Republican candidates at that time, and the format essentially was McElroy cross-examining each of these candidates, and it was a way, in my view, what we were talking about before, to get through the BS, to question these people, to
you mean they wouldn't be on, but they're
no, they would be on. This was like a show,
a
mock debate to show these Republican operatives, here's how we would do it. Yeah. And of course, the Republican operators are outraged by it, and it's never going to happen.
Since we're talking fiction, the best presidential debate I ever heard was on the old West Wing, where the
same writer, by the way,
same writer, exactly where he.
But except the voice and reason in the newsroom is Sam Waterston.
Yeah.
So you're just like, all right, this is fine.
Yeah. But Saturday Night Live did what you're saying. They did a debate between four guys who were dressed up to look, back in the day, like Mario and Teddy and the other guys who were running. And Cuomo was outraged because the guy from Teddy was, somebody said to Teddy, you can't win. You kill that girl. Meaning, you know,
Chappaquiddick.
And then they turn around to Mario and said, and you can't win because you're in the mafia. Well, I got to tell you, that did not amuse Cuomo.
No, nor should it have.
Your point being that when you try to have a debate that is actually substantive, the parties in this particular don't want to have anything to do with it.
When we, meaning my newspaper, used to host these things just for our editorial board,
Right. We
didn't have quite that structure that we would be able to do that cross-examining. But we often found we were not fit to do the cross-examining because they knew their subject matter, frankly, better than we did. But if you can find people who know the issues, you know, the Alan Chartocks of the world, the Jerry Benjamins of the world, to sit down and question the candidates, and so that when an Astorino accuses Cuomo of this and Cuomo says that's nonsense and I accuse you of this, they will be able to say, wait a minute, let's get to the bottom of this. And that's the kind of debate we didn't hear last night, in large part because of the format and the amount of time and the fact that there were four people on the stage.
I did not watch the debate because I was watching coverage of Ottawa, mm-hmm. where the war,
right.
which terrorism we should talk has about. Come to Canada.
Now, we want to get to that. We still have about 48 more letters, so let's get to those.
Well, we don't have to read them if you don't want to.
No, that's okay.
Okay. Eve says, hi, the two major candidates for governor are almost nothing of value since they are highly, say almost nothing of value since they are highly constrained by their parties, parenthesis, money, and their vicious tactics. The real ideas, parenthesis, not tropes, in political debates come from splinter parties. Therefore, we need to hear from all the parties so we can have information on which to make decisions. Okay, there was more, but I'm not going to read it all. Okay. Let's see here. Yasu says, good morning, all. Glad there was a conversation on this. Were it not for the other two men, I would have tuned out of the continuous back and forth mud raking between Cuomo and Astorino. Boy, I found it frustrating and detracting. Get 'em, Rosemary. Dr. Chartock spelled wrong again. Please say schnook again. Okay. And. All right, you never know what turns them on. Okay, Richard says, Ira, the minor candidates give alternative views. They may not win, but create the opportunity to put pressure on the winner to move toward those viewpoints. A debate between the two primary candidates usually just gives party talking points. Richard, okay. And then Hattie says, hello, I just heard Ian as a sub till Alan got there making good points. Nothing against the older crowd. I'm right in that age group. But it might be a good idea to keep that young voice on the panel more regularly, especially since the next generations need to keep the WAMC voice alive. Always love it when Ray is on, too. Yep. And then from Jenny, more Ian. Wait a second.
Yeah, he's great.
Stop it. It was great to hear Ian filling in on the panel. Please have him on the roundtable more. Jenny from Amherst. Okay, and Patsy says, good morning. I was disgusted at the failure of the two major candidates to stay on topic. It was ridiculous, not the fault of the other two candidates, the panel and moderator of the League of Women Voters. Foolish waste of airtime. Sorry to say, as always, Patsy. Okay. And I guess that's sort of it. Okay, that's it for now.
All right, it for now. So let us take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Ottawa, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from the ADK Market, Keene, New York, country store featuring natural foods, local and specialty products, fresh baked goods, artisanal beer, and everyday groceries. ADKMarket.com. The Opalka Gallery at Sage College of Albany, featuring art exhibits and other cultural events, now showing artist Mike Lear's career retrospective, sage.edu/opalka. And Twillis Ford Gold Butler & Monroe, LLP, a New York law firm representing physicians and healthcare professionals for over 100 years. NYMedDefense.com.
The heart of the Canadian capital was thrown into panic and placed in a lockdown on Wednesday after a gunman armed with a rifle or shotgun fatally wounded a corporal guarding the tomb of the unknown soldier at the National War Memorial, entered the nearby Parliament building and fired multiple times before he was shot and killed. It was the second deadly assault on a uniformed member of Canada's armed forces in 3 days. The Ottawa attack heightened fears that Canada, a strong ally of the United States, in its campaign against the Islamic State militant group convulsing the in the Mideast, had been targeted in a reprisal either as part of an organized plot or a lone wolf assault by a radicalized Canadian. Still many, many questions having to do with this, but Rosemary, as you stated before we went to break, that once again we're dealing with this issue of terrorism.
Yeah, this is pretty frightening. This is an attack on an ally. Apparently, Canadian intelligence had word and has been tracking a group of, here's a scary idea, Canadians, native-born Canadians, who have converted to and become very radical Islamists. And this was the second incident, but of course it was in the Parliament, and so we got lots of attention, sympathy from the U.S. And then the in the United States, another guy jumps over the fence at the White House. So,
but they got him quickly.
They did get him quickly this time, having learned from the last experience. The other lesson from this, and Ira and I have been talking about it on the break, was the performance of the media in Canada, which was quite wonderful in dealing with a national crisis.
Well, you know, Alan likes to chide me for having too much time, but when I did get in front of the TV yesterday, I watched for quite a number of hours on CNN, and then I flipped around, and the sense of exaggeration or reporting information that was incomplete or outright wrong, as it ultimately proved to be, as it almost always does in these kinds of breaking news situations, as opposed to what was reported to have been the way it went in this, on the CBC, where the CBC's answer to Walter Cronkite was very adamant.
The person who was
the anchor. He was adamant and said on the air, "We're not going to put anything on the air until we verify it." There were apparently no bells and whistles and no big music and dramatics. They reported the news. And going back to the hour coverage, you sit in front of that television and watch this kind of coverage, whether it's this or Ebola or any other of the topics of the day, you can be driven crazy. You can be brainwashed. You can just want to hide under the blankets. And so the coverage really drives what we think about these events. And the end of the day, we really still don't know a lot about Ottawa. We know they killed one guy. We don't know if there's another guy. We don't really know enough about the one guy, except I've read that they Canadians had withheld his passport so he wouldn't go to Syria. So they
group,
do know about
There's
him.
A group that they were following. There's right. clearly been yeah. intelligence there
and
that something was going
that,
on.
That some of the guys over on the other side are enemies, have made it clear that people should attack, that lone wolves should attack over here. And I think that to some degree, that's what we're seeing. But Ira, you're a brilliant man. Your hair.
Here it comes.
I know it.
Just, your hair is graying a little bit.
Here it comes.
You've been in the news business all your life. So CNN and the others, they do this thing, right? Now the question, and you hate it. and you say you hate it. You know, you see Wolf Blitzer. I never had much for him, but he...
Him you don't like.
Yeah, he stands up and he touches the screen, all kinds of...
Stand by.
All kinds of things happen. So what would you... Why do you think they do it?
It's clear why they do it, and particularly in CNN's case, which has been flailing for several years, and their ratings go up dramatically...
Through the roof.
Through a breaking news. There's no question about it, but at some point, and we talk about this, whether it's a print newspaper that goes crazy and a disservice to its readers and the public, or a CNN if it overplays something, is that where is the line between journalistic integrity and going after the big bucks? And that's a harder line to find these days, or the line has moved quite a bit in these days of the amount of competition and the reduction in revenue in these various media outlets. Integrity is going by the board, is I guess what
I'm
saying.
Well, you know, I mean, I've been reading Harold Holzer's new book on Lincoln in the Press, which is fantastic. And, you know, he makes it clear that this kind of garbage has been going on forever. And in fact, in some ways, worse back in the day. So things haven't really changed. But when you say the tension, Ira, is between making money, basically, and quote, integrity, you know where it's going to go every time, right?
Well, it'll keep going that way until and unless, using CNN as an example, if they tampered it down, and the breaking news
and became more boring,
but nevertheless, the place that you go to for breaking news, which it currently is, I mean, people are there already. Do they feel the need? Why do they feel the need to hype it as much as they do? I mean, can't you take the CBC model and spend the amount of time that you're spending reporting what's going on without scaring the bejesus out of everybody?
Well, there's a big difference between the Canadian national character and the American national character. I got news for you. There are times I say, well, you know, Canadians have a very good reason to be proud of their culture and their country.
Well, all of that aside, because that's all sort of media issues. When you're
we're totally off on a tangent, not the coverage of the event.
So
why
event
are young men from Canada turning into ISIS supporters? And it isn't just Canada. It's happening in the U.S. The New York Times had a big article about Tunisians are supplying more fighters to ISIS than any other place. Why? That's a country that is building its own democracy. We haven't looked at that. We just paint ISIS as this big evil thing, and yet there's something extremely compelling going on, and we need to find out what that is and counter it effectively, not just throw bombs at them.
Well, how do you counter it? If it is, I mean, you say it seems to be some evil thing. It is an evil thing. I mean, it is an evil thing, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't know. There is something. Why does a Canadian boy?
Well,
we do terrible things too. That's not the answer.
That's okay.
Americans and Canadians do terrible things. All soldiers do terrible things. But what is it about ISIS that's drawing the loyalty?
They cut people's heads off.
Oh, I think it's as Rosemary said. We do terrible things too, and I think that there is now a sense in the Arab world and that the extreme Islamic militants are able to attract people because they are apparently very good at using social media and the internet helps them get their word out. It's
social media is calling people to
radicalism.
I can't.
What would you have us do?
I was going to take the discussion's gone a sort of a different way. I thought I was going to be vilified for my position, which is we need to be as vigilant as we can in the intelligence community to try to head these things off. That said, I believe this comes under the heading of welcome to the new normal.
Right.
It is going to happen in this country. It has happened in this country. It's going to happen again. It's not pretty. All we can hope is that our government does as best it can to limit it, if not completely prevent it. You know, the word is that since 9/11, the government has been successful in thwarting any number of other potential attacks.
But those are from outsiders, Ira.
These are
people within their own country who have decided that.
And that's why intelligence is good. I mean, this is why you have to know you have to have people on the street. I mean, how it's not
which I think they did in Canada. This was the second incident this week, and there was only I'm sorry for that family, but only one life lost. Mm-hmm. And if it's social media, what is it about ISIS that is attracting young people from around the world? They're being called back to the religion, and that needs to be countered with, I don't know, economic help, with education, with if it's social media, man, I want a campaign that calls people into war for democracy.
Mm.
Why public diplomacy is what this is called, and we don't have it. We're not doing it.
There is one prevailing thought that I've heard frequently espoused, that there is not enough counterweight to an ISIS extremist militant group from those of the same religion who will point out to the vast majority of people who already understand this, as well as those who may be teetering the other way, that this is not what we believe in.
Right.
And that has to be
now you're getting at,
yeah, I mean, that has to happen in the mosques, and it has to happen in the
newspapers.
This
was not good news for Muslims anywhere.
It's unfortunate because, as you know, the cliche, but also the true cliche, is that the vast majority of Muslims are peace-abiding people and are outraged as much as we are about this. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact is that there are any number of American citizens who are Muslim, not just converted to it, as this fellow in Canada who changed his name from Michael Bishop or something to an Islamic name. But
do we know how old he was? I couldn't find an age.
I thought I heard he was in his 20s.
Okay, so young man.
Very young man.
So you look at this issue, and one of the things that I thought was, when it was scary in watching the coverage, is the Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, was in the Capitol at the time, and was rushed out, and you know, you can only assume that he was targeted within.
They said that the fellow, after he shot the guard at this Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, ran into the Parliament building.
Which is right across the street.
Right, sort of past civilians, quote unquote. And so the belief is that he was heading towards the chambers to pick off politicians. That was what he wanted to do. He could have sprayed any number of others along the way and didn't.
And then with the Ottawa River right behind you, they were even thinking that he would maybe take his own life and then go into the river. So it is, and then you, of course, that put us on high alert here in this country. Mm-hmm. And I know the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier here in Washington was heavily secured yesterday. And but that just seems like a needle in the haystack, doesn't it? Because you just don't know.
I don't know. My impression was that the Canadians actually did have a lot of information about what possible action
happen. As a result.
And that's shared with the Americans. I actually think that intelligence did work in this case. And the tomb was shut down because of the equivalent of that in Canada is right near the State House, and he had staged some of the operation.
The soldier who was guarding the tomb, who was murdered, was unarmed.
Exactly.
We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We are out of time. Thank you all for listening and for writing in, roundtable@wamc.org. We will be back with more Roundtable after this.